More than 10 weeks has passed since some 15,000 slogan-chanting, placard-waving teachers converged on the statehouse for what they labeled the Red for Ed Action Day rally. But their call for higher pay and fewer state-imposed training and licensing mandates continues, it seems, to resonate with lawmakers. Hi, I'm John Schwannis, and on this edition of Indiana Lawmakers, we'll offer a crash course, don't worry, no pop quizzes, on what's at stake in regard to education this session. Don't go away. Indiana Lawmakers, from the statehouse to your house.
Purdue Research Foundation's $1 billion Discovery Park District, where the Convergence Center is merging companies, investors, and entrepreneurs with Purdue innovators to address global challenges and advance life-changing technologies. More at discoveryparkdistrict.com.
Our tests might be standardized, but when it comes to the ongoing push to improve Indiana schools, lawmakers' actions and objectives suggest anything but conformity. In recent sessions, members of the General Assembly have demanded rigorous, uniform standards, yet bemoaned teaching to the test. They've celebrated local decision-making, yet threatened underperforming districts with state oversight. They've called for accountability and transparency, yet allowed some schools to operate largely out of public view. Here to assess where we've been and where we might be headed, our Republican Representative Robert Boehning of Indianapolis, longtime chairman of the House Education Committee. Democratic Representative Tanya Paff of Terre Haute, a member of that committee and a teacher with more than 25 years of classroom experience. Keith Gamble, president of the Indiana State Teachers Association, which represents some 45,000 public school educators. And Terry Spradlin, executive director of the Indiana School Boards Association, which serves the governing bodies of the state's 289 school districts. Thank you all for being here to talk about what obviously has been the dominant issue of the session, and I guess we could probably say that about every session, at least that I recall. It's always kind of the dominant issue. All right, I'm going to spring something on you here, maybe. We've had the I-STEP test. We've had the I-STEP Plus. We've had I-Learn. I'm starting a new assessment. We're going to call it I-Lawmakers. Get it? I-Lawmakers. Go around. This is admittedly unscientific, but so viewers and listeners get a sense of where you all are coming from. Give me a letter grade assessment of where Indiana public school education is right now. We'll start with you,
probably,
Bob Boehning.
Probably about C.
Tough grade or C. You want to elaborate on that? I don't have a blue book exam for you here, but
I think
teachers always say elaborate on
your
answer.
Yeah, I think as you look at Nate, for instance, and look at how the whole country, I don't know that's really reflective of just Indiana. I think our whole country is struggling. And you look at PISA results, you look at NAEP results, you start doing comparisons to other countries.
These are, of course,
countries.
All standardized tests theoretically cross state.
Yeah, well, NAEP is the National Assessment for Education Progress, called the Nation's Test. And then PISA is the international exam given at 72 countries. And you see where we rank in terms of performance on that. I would say, we actually have not fallen behind. We've stayed very static, and the rest of the world has taken a lot of our research and all of what our researchers saw in best practice and put them in place, and we've just kind of stayed fairly static across that.
Tanya Paff, after 25 years in the classroom, you are very accustomed to giving out grades, so go for it.
I'm going to say B. We have a lot of, I don't like the testing aspect, so I'm going to not talk about testing. We have dedicated teachers. We're passionate. We go in. We educate these kids. We take care of children. We inspire them. So for me, public education is at a B. Of course, there's problems. But, if we could get more teachers and retain more teachers, that would help. That's a different conversation. But overall,
we'll get there. We're going to get to all that.
All the teachers I know, we are dedicated, and we're doing a great job.
All right. I see a sense of trend here, but I'm not sure how long the trend can last. What do you think?
I'm going to turn this a little bit and say that I think we should get away from this diminishing of what a letter grade is. Grading of our students is something that occurs with the educator, the student, and home. And they know what that information means. And to simply think that we could distill down the important work that we do in education or the important work that our legislators do into one letter grade then causes too many assumptions on what does this letter grade mean to this person when they're watching this program today versus someone else from another area in the state. So we have issues that are important. Some of them I have been very pleased that have advanced through this session in a positive way for education and others that I still think we need to work on. But I think we need to move away from trying to distill something down into just something such as a letter in order to make sure that folks know what's important.
All right, note to self, Keith Gamble doesn't like moderator's question. I'll just keeping that in mind in case I forget. Now, Terry Spraylin, before you had this current job,
right,
you spent your life down at IU. You were part of an institute or a center with a long name that I won't try to remember, but it had evaluation in it and a lot of
education policy as
policy
well.
And testing. You lived it. You breathed it. So give
love
us
data.
So
I love data now too.
All right. So crunch that data and give me a grade.
John, I'd say there's some compelling data to cite here as well. The Annie Casey Foundation last year ranked us 14th best in the nation for education based on multiple measures. And that's despite Indiana spending the 38th, we were ranked 38th in the nation for per pupil spending. So 14th best on education value, but 38th in the nation on per pupil spending. So that's a great value for Hoosiers. The other factor is that we're an open enrollment state now with a lot of competition and choice. And despite that, when parents have an opportunity to choose, they're choosing public education, choosing to move from one school district to another public school district. So I'd say parents are saying public education is still a very high quality opportunity for their children, and they're making that choice most often.
And note to self, Terry Spraylin did not answer the question.
An A.
Right. Wow, okay. I get the sense that in some ways school reform and school improvement is like Indiana's infrastructure highway system. You know, it's never done, I guess. Do you ever declare victory? And does that lead to what some have talked about with reform fatigue? I don't know if that's the term necessarily that people have used, but I mean, I go back to covering government. It goes back to Bob Orr administration and A-plus program for education excellence. And every governor since then has been self-styled as the education governor, and every session seems to be the education session. I mean, where do we go with this? Are we just assuming that this is an ongoing proposition?
No, I think at some point in time, hopefully we'll get to the point where we're more closely aligned to where our K-12 system and our post-secondary system is meeting the needs of students. When you look at today's economy and look at the number of jobs that are open today, Indiana is, by the most recent Brookings Institute report, we are the most vulnerable state in the country based on automation and what's going to likely happen in the next several years.
Because we've been such a strong manufacturing
correct
state.
Correct, and because our workforce is not skilled and ready to take those next jobs, those next level jobs that are going to be much more technical in nature as opposed to what was historically a very manufacturing state where you didn't need the level of education that you are going to need in the future. 99% of all jobs that were created since the Great Recession have required some level of post-secondary, and I think that's going to be, so education is going to continue to be a greater and greater asset to Hoosiers as they move forward.
Well, that's a goal now that's been put forth by a number of state agencies or state officials. What 60% is sort of, I know that's more of a higher ed question than K-12 at this point.
But, yeah,
is a goal. Whether that's
national,
whether that's a traditional bachelor's degree or maybe some sort of certificate post.
Right.
What do you think? Is this a perpetual just hang out the work in progress?
We can
slope?
Always do better.
Yeah, so it's never done.
It's never done. No. Just like a student's education is never done, right? So you graduate. You have a couple math classes in high school,
well,
and then you go on to college.
Maybe one.
And you always.
This isn't about me, though.
Oh, sorry. The process is, you always want to do better, right? So you have to reflect, and you say, what are we doing right? What are we doing wrong? And let's move on.
Well, let's sort of set the stage, and everybody knows, I guess, now where you're all coming from. Let's bring it back to this session, since we're in the midst of it right now. We're almost at the kind of the crossover point, the halfway point, so we kind of have a pretty good sense of what's happening. And it seems that in many ways, Keith Gamble, that the agenda to a certain extent might have been set back on Organization Day with an intimate gathering of 15,000 or so of your closest friends, many wearing red, at part of the Red for Ed Action Day rally, calling for higher teacher pay, calling for a relaxation, perhaps, of some of the training, most recently imposed training requirements, and a detachment of or hold harmless provision for some of the ILEARN scores that, there's only one set of ILEARN scores, it's a new test, but we're less than stellar. Did you go into that saying, did you accomplish with that rally what you wanted to accomplish?
Well, I think with as the discussion has been, we will continue to advocate for what we believe is best for our students. And that will, as long as education, we value that in the state, then we will continue to work for what's best for our students. But on that day, I think what you saw was that there were a number of folks that are part of our profession who believe that they have tried to work through the system. They have written and called, and they've met with legislators, and they wanted to make sure that everyone in Indiana knew that we are galvanized around this issue. And that's why you saw the gathering that you did on November 19th. But we shouldn't dismiss what's happening back home. If you go to any of the local Third House or Cracker Barrel meetings back home, you're seeing a lot of educators there as well.
So if you had to give the rally's impact a letter grade, I tried once. I'm not going to go back there. Terry Spradlin, what do you see as the influences that shaped this session? Was it sort of, we've heard education reform fatigue, let's just let things settle. Then there was also the backlash against, backlash is not too strong a word, against the iLearn scores, the rollout of that test. And then, of course, you had the rallying cry of teachers. Was one of those the driver, or is it something altogether different?
You know, John, the backdrop really was the budget session last year and you know, ending the decade of where we were trending for public education funding and not going in the right direction. So the budget last session was really a good budget for public education, and where will we be in 2 years and 4 years? So we're really looking closely at how we were able to increase teacher pay this school year, and the data is still coming out, but we think the news is going to be very positive. So we're hoping this is a new trend, and in the meantime, we're asking the legislature, you know, to stop that swinging pendulum of education reform. They've passed 85 new laws in just the last 2 years we've had to implement. So we're hoping this session is a calm, quiet session with very few laws passing. We love the House Bill 1001 and Senate Bill 2, the hold harmless provision. But we're actually hoping very few laws pass this session so that we can catch up and focus on, you know, core matters of teaching our children and building on the successful budget of 2019 and moving ahead with that.
Terry, based on those comments, though, I would think you'd love House Bill 1003. I mean,
yeah, we do. Yeah,
I mean, that
absolutely.
Was one you missed, and you talk about regulations, and we're giving you plenty of flexibility. Just go to state's Board of Education, and they'll waive almost a significant part of Title 20. So
we did support that school flexibility bill, and Senate Bill 295 also is a very similar bill to that, and we testified in support of that as well.
So you're liking the things that are optional. I mean, a lot of the we've seen several things in the education arena that are going to basically end up making things optional, including this 15-hour requirement, perhaps for teachers to learn more about what constitutes workforce needs in the 21st century.
Yeah.
So that's, you're satisfied with the session, and you think that the salary increase situation was already well in hand because of, 2.5% in each year of the biennium?
$743 million. Our preliminary data, I don't know where Terry's is, shows that 99% of school districts actually have given salary increases. 60% of those that we see already were equal to or greater than any increase they've given in recent years. So the data out there is good. I still think we could do better.
Why are we seeing, I just saw some data this week, Center for American Progress, and you can point to any number of groups that maybe are aligned with you more than others, but that shows that people are sort of turned off with the teaching profession in terms of young people who might aspire to a job in the classroom. I think it's over the past 10 years or something, that according to the data I saw, 50% reduction in people who want to be teachers. Is that troubling?
It's definitely troubling. We want the brightest and best to go in education. You know, I think it depends on how you approach it. I work for Marion. We actually are finding that we'll have exponential increases in terms of the number of students.
You should point out that's the university, not the school district.
Marion University, the county.
Yeah.
But we've approached it in a totally different way. We have a very rigorous program. We're out actively recruiting. Michael Hicks from Ball State came because this is not just a U.S. problem, not just an Indiana problem, not just a U.S. problem, but it's an international problem if you look around the world in terms of people going into education. And part of it, as Michael Hicks would say, is part of it's unfortunately economics. There's several things that play into it. Education is very feminized. More women go into education than men, unfortunately. We definitely need more men and more minorities. But as the opportunities for women have opened up, fewer have gone into that, and as the economy is stronger, a lot different people make a lot of different choices. But there's no question, I believe, we have to make education much more attractive to everyone, because I think teachers are nation builders. If we don't have a high quality education system, our country is going to struggle.
Whether people are filled with testosterone or estrogen, I mean, is money the answer to this, do you think? And you would have preferred to see big dollars, this one-time bonus, this session, I presume.
Absolutely. So I have three children in college right now, and none of them want to be teachers. So we talk about it all the time. I'm like, why don't you teach? They're like, Mom, I'm going to graduate with $30,000 in debt because they're my kids. And, you know, I go into my corporation and starting salary is $36,000. You know, they cannot live with me forever. So, you know, money is not always the answer. But, man, it would sure help keep and retain and attract teachers. I mean, I was on the floor last year, and I remember this this principal or superintendent was testifying, and he looked at an English teacher, and he said, hey, if you want to come to my district, I'll give you a $5,000 raise. So when we're recruiting from district to district, state to state, we have a problem.
That's the way the economy is supposed to work, though, with market forces. I mean, that's
sure.
The market force works if you have employees ready to go in to the jobs that are left behind.
And we ostensibly don't.
And that's where we are losing. And so while many school districts did well in this budget, we have to remember that there are 60 school districts that are receiving less money, and another 100 districts that are barely able to keep up with the rate of inflation and cost of living. And so while my school district is one of those, I'm from the Evansville-Vandenberg School Corporation, we had a very minimal raise this year, but we have to recognize that then those school districts that are able to give a larger contract, then as soon as there are openings there, someone that's taught for a couple of years in a struggling school district moves right on over. And so we have these rural districts and the districts that are struggling that are becoming essentially the farm team for the more affluent schools.
Well, again, and Terry, I'm going to get to just real briefly. We'll go back to the rally, the three things you wanted. Most people would say you got two out of three. Your membership, your constituency, happy with the session? If it ends the way it is, and in all likelihood it is.
Yes, there were two items that we pushed forward that, that appear to be going the direction that we wanted. We still believe the session isn't over. And we will continue on our third issue. We believe that $75 million in a year when the state collected nearly $500 million over what they anticipated, that $75 million is a very small amount of that money that could be used in a great place.
Of course, $300 million of which you had an eye on actually was signed into law yesterday, that will be going to university building projects up front.
Yeah, so John, you know, pay absolutely is important. We'll keep working on that. You know, I think the governor's already come out with a proposal in a State of the State union address. And
a way to partially fund through
with
retirement.
Some pension strategy to free up money, $50 million per year. But the next budget will put more money into public education, I'm confident. The other part of that is respect, the respect for the profession, right, for helping with recruitment and retention. There's a bill to help with that. So 1002 is a decoupling of use of iLearn scores of the state summative assessment for evaluation of teachers. And so we've put
forever
more.
In that bill. There's a Senate version that would just do it for, 2 years?
Right. But this
would be
is a permanent decoupling. So we've put more and more emphasis on that state one-time state summative assessment to evaluate teachers. This would say no longer it would be a local control matter whether school boards want to use iLearn scores to evaluate teachers. We're very much supportive of that.
How much do you sense that this is the pendulum? I'm a believer in the pendulum of history, and it seems like we went through, you know, teachers and locals know best, and then it was back with the No Child Left Behind and accountability. We have to have, you know, if you can't measure it, you can't, you know, you can't have success. And we saw a lot of rigid testing. Now it seems we're hearing, you know, we don't want people teaching the test. Is this just a natural pendulum? And if so, or how far are we going to swing this other direction, do you think?
Obviously, we're swinging, I think, more towards local control, less state oversight. I actually think that my personal opinion is what we need to do is get out of a lot of the inputs and be holding schools more accountable for outputs. So I don't, you know, should the state get involved in telling teachers how to teach or anything like that. I think that's probably best left to teachers to figure that out. But, you know, let's make sure the kids come out at the end. And the bottom line is, I think all of us, regardless of how we're approaching it, what we really want is make sure that kids have the opportunity to have success in life and that they have a quality education. And I agree with Tanya that we're looking at a world today where you need to be lifelong learners. It's not going to end when you leave high school. It's going to, in fact, it's not going to leave when you leave whatever post-secondary options you select. So we've got to create and develop creative, problem-solving, critical thinking students that are going to be successful in life. So I totally agree that a one-time test doesn't make sense to only use that, but I do believe that we need to have some look at some data. I mean, I don't think anybody in this world does not use data to help inform their next step, and it is an instrument that can be used. Not the only one, but an instrument that can be used to see where we are and how well we're moving.
Of course, I couldn't help notice that my own alma mater, Indiana University, has dispensed largely with standardized testing as a requirement of admission. You know, a lot of this now is sort of we've seen this session play out to a large extent. It's a short session. We know how it's going to play out. Now everybody's already, I mean, this is no, you know, epiphany, but people are already focused on next year. It is a budget session. What is your priority heading into next year?
Teacher pay.
Simple as that.
So can I just elaborate for a second?
Yeah.
So the thing about teacher pay is, you know, teachers, by nature, no one, not any teacher I've ever met said, I'm going to go into teaching to get rich. I mean, we just want a decent living wage. We want to be treated as professionals. So give us a raise. Make it so that if you want to do the job that you love, you don't have to do two jobs. You don't have to get an extra job. So get us where we need to be. And we'll take care of the kids.
If that's the one quote-unquote reform bill next session.
Yes.
Keith Campbell, how about you?
We absolutely have to address teacher pay. We have been stagnant for a decade. So even those schools that have seen a great increase in their current contract, that's after 8 to 10 years of stagnant wages. So while I do applaud those that have been able to move and advance their salary schedules, we're still far behind where we need to be.
You don't foresee a time when this is a state mandated issue, though. I mean, right now, because of collective bargaining agreements, everything happens largely at the local level. And, you know, these folks here in the General Assembly can say, please, please, we don't want you to, you know, spend this on this purpose, but maybe not.
We do not advocate for a statewide contract or statewide minimums, but we do believe in local control. But we have to be honest that as rules have changed within the state controls the purse strings. Mm-hmm. And so the state, by and large, carries all of the burden of funding our schools, and they have to recognize where we rank. We know that we're last in the region. And if, like myself, I live in Evansville. I can drive south and teach in Henderson, Kentucky, and get there in less time than it takes me to drive to Evansville north on the north side of the county. There are economic decisions that teachers in Indiana can make.
Well, and you were right. It is now largely state, but one thing we've seen is the notion of levy and referenda, some for basic operating, some for capital, some now for school security.
Safety.
Is the same fatigue that is affecting lawmakers in terms of maybe reform affecting voters, do you think, in terms of the dollars, those referendum fights and the dollars that may be needed by districts across the state?
This last November, we had 13 referenda proposals on the ballot. 7 passed, 6 were defeated. So that's the lowest rate of passage in quite some time.
Does that worry you?
That's a significant issue, but every election's different. So I think it's a temporary trend. You know, there are a lot of other backdrop issues that may have impacted local issues, state and national issues. So I think we're wise about how to approach those. But unfortunately, we need to continue to pursue referenda dollars to support general fund and operations of school corporations because, John, since 2010, we've declined by $900 per pupil in spending. So funding is always king. We need to get more money from the state legislature in the next budget.
All right. Your work is cut out for you. I think you have your marching orders. Great conversation. I appreciate it. Obviously, a very important issue for all of us. Again, my guests have been Republican Representative Robert Boehning of Indianapolis, Democratic Representative Tanya Paff of Terre Haute, Keith Gamble, President of the Indiana State Teachers Association, and Terry Spradlin, Executive Director of the Indiana School Boards Association. Candidates are running on health care reform, but what can local politicians actually do to rein in soaring health care costs? On the next Indiana Lawmakers. And as I always say, you can't spell education without Ed. So I'm pleased to welcome to our table our regular commentator, Ed Feigenbaum, publisher of the newsletter Indiana Legislative Insight and its sister publication, Indiana Education Insight, both part of Hanna News Service. So if you had to give that conversation a letter, no, I'm stuck on that, but I'm going to get off that wagon.
Pass, fail, and red for Ed. Now I understand what it was for.
This sort of is all unfolding as we might have predicted back, if not on Organization Day, certainly earlier in the session. Any surprises on the education front, or is it all there for us to see now?
Yeah, I think on the teacher pay thing, it was the big kabuki dance that we kind of always expect. It's a lot like the whole impeachment proceedings. You know, you go in and you think, all right, there's no way that they're going to convict him in the Senate, just like we don't think that the legislature is going to pass that pay raise. And then you start thinking, well, maybe they'll do a bonus or something. The governor hinted at something in his State of the State ahead of time. And you think, well, maybe just like witnesses, you know, we'll get that something, a little something out of this. And then in the end, you know, when the governor this week signed the big spending bill, the surplus spending bill, with no money for teachers or additional money for K-12, we realized, hey, game over.
That
so it's not going to happen. Yeah, it's not going to happen this session, we know. And everybody's kind of playing the roles that you saw here earlier in the roundtable, and everybody understands that the big fight is on for next session, and the governor's task force is going to be reporting before then, too.
Well, it's since that's all pretty much clear now, we're at the halfway point, effectively, almost. There's always that one bill that sort of, you know, comes out of nowhere and sucks up all the oxygen. What is that bill? Has it surfaced yet?
Ooh, yeah, there's always something that you just don't see coming, and it kind of takes up consumes all the calories in this session, as one State House veteran said. And this session has just been going so quickly, and you know, we've compressed so much in there that we really didn't see anything like that until maybe this past week. And I think that you may see this bill that deals with the change in the age for potential death penalty and for putting young people in criminal institutions, bumping it down to 14 or 12, depending on which particular amendment you were looking at in committee this last week. But I think that has the potential for being a bill that could rile up a lot of people from a lot of different sides. There's no partisan element to it, and I'd keep a watch on that one to see if that distracts everybody.
Entirely different kind of education bill, I guess we could say there.
But it derived from education, from the school shooting in Noblesville.
Well, it'll be interesting to watch. Ed, thank you for flagging that. We'll be watching, and we'll look forward to next week and more insight. Thank you. For more information, episode streams, and other extra content, visit us on the web at wfyi.org/lawmakers. You can access live streaming coverage of the General Assembly on the Internet as well. And remember, you can get our show on demand from Xfinity. Well, that concludes another edition of Indiana Lawmakers. I'm John Schwannis, and on behalf of WFYI Public Media and Indiana's other public broadcasting stations, I thank you for joining us, and I invite you to visit WFYI.org for more State House news. Until next week, take care.
Purdue Research Foundation's $1 billion Discovery Park District, where the Convergence Center is merging companies, investors, and entrepreneurs with Purdue innovators to address global challenges and advance life-changing technologies. More at discoverypark district.com.